Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Well, one wide receiver name is off the market for the Kansas City Chiefs. If you are one of those fans that was excited about Mike Evans maybe becoming a Kansas City Chief, that is just not going to happen. And I'm not even sure if he was on the market longer that it would have happened. A two-year, $52 million deal that includes $35 million guaranteed. This was reported earlier this morning, and Mike Evans stays in Tampa Bay with the Buccaneers. I'm not really sure where I stand anymore on the topic of a number one wide receiver. I'm not sure if I think the Chiefs should piece it together like they did last year and the year before, if I think it's worth it to go out there and spend top dollar for a number one, or if they should overpay for a number two. It's still so early in the free agency period. Mike Evans, to me, was never really at the top of the list. I thought that he would be somebody that, of course, would help out Patrick Mahomes a lot. You'd have a guaranteed 1,000-yard receiver, a big target for the red zone. But he never really felt like a realistic option. You know, even when the Buccaneers let him go and test free agency for a few days, it felt like, you know, this always seemed like the likely scenario. And boy, did Tampa Bay really dig into their wallet and give him an expensive deal. I mean, Mike Evans is not 24, 25 years old anymore. $26 million a year for a guy on the other side of 30. That's a lot of money. Now, consistency is what's going to give him that money. He's been a 1,000-yard receiver seemingly every single year. You know, I'm not really one of those people that thinks just because you're over the age of 30 means you're going to decline at that point. We've seen a lot of, you know, 30-year-old-plus wide receivers still play pretty well into their mid-30s. And this isn't a long deal. This is 2 years. So it works out well for Tampa Bay. But I thought to myself, you know, for that type of money, I don't think that Kansas City would have even been close to outbidding that. That just didn't make much sense. And I don't think Mike Evans is a type of wide receiver that would have taken a discount just to come play with Patrick Mahomes. He knows he's going to get his numbers. His team was just in the playoffs. It's not like he was in Carolina or like he was in, you know, Tennessee. He was a guy that feels like they can build something special still in Tampa. And he's already won a Super Bowl ring with this franchise. So to me, it's a no-brainer for him. But it pivots to the point for Kansas City of, well, what do you think is the best option now? I do not think T. Higgins is going to be a Kansas City Chief. I'm not sure if they're going to go the trade route. I don't think they really have many resources to go and trade. I think they're going to go through the draft to add another wide receiver. And then at that point, you're looking at maybe spending a little bit of money or overpaying just slightly for a guy who performed pretty well last year. One guy that's not going to be thought that highly of, one guy that is definitely not put up there with the top names, is Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney, I think, is a decent number three for this team. And then if you go out there and use a first-round pick on a wide receiver and you come back with, let's say, Adonai Mitchell, let's say Rashi Rice, and then Darnell Mooney, I mean, that's a much better 1-2-3 than you even had last year. But the wide receiver market, as good as it seemed, a lot of these guys are going to get paid very, very well. And it goes back to, do you feel like you need to? Now, certainly winning the Super Bowl is going to help that. It's going to mask a lot of the flaws that you had. And if you would have gone back to November, December, I think every Chiefs fan would have said, I don't care what it takes, pay somebody. Pay somebody to come in and, you know, be your number one or your number two. But here's the available options out there. Odell Beckham Jr. You know, he was paid pretty well last offseason and wasn't that great for Baltimore. Curtis Samuel is an unrestricted free agent. Tyler Boyd of Cincinnati, unrestricted free agent. Kendrick Bourne, unrestricted free agent. You know, you look at DJ Chark, unrestricted free agent. Paris Campbell, Jamal Agnew, Josh Reynolds. I know that was a hot name for Kansas City last offseason. Hollywood Brown is another. Calvin Ridley would be intriguing. That's what you're kind of left with, though. You know, Michael Pittman Jr. is somebody that I personally is going to believe is going to take the Mike Evans approach here and stay in-house, get paid pretty well. Other than that, though, there's not a ton of guys that jump off the page. I mean, you're going to have a bunch of those number threes and number fours that you could give $8 million to. Kendrick Bourne comes to mind. Cedric Wilson comes to mind. Tyler Boyd comes to mind. So Brett Veach needs to identify, what does this wide receiver room need? Does it need depth or does it need a playmaker? And if we need a playmaker, do we find it in free agency or do we find it in the draft? Who's to say you can't find the 1,000-yard receiver in day one of the draft? I think that could definitely be above 50%. I mean, did anybody look at Rashi Rice in day two and say that's an 1,000-yard receiver, a 1,200-yard receiver, including the playoffs? Probably not. No, I think you look at the way Andy Reid utilizes rookies in his offense. They don't really shine until late in the season, but Rashi Rice from day one, game one, he was a contributor. So I look at mock drafts pretty much every single day, just a quick scan as to what people are saying. You know, I'm sure there's going to be more mock drafts moving forward that have the Chiefs taking Xavier Worthy after he broke the 40-yard dash record, a 4.21 official time that broke Chris Johnson's record. So you always equate speed to Kansas City. It feels like the perfect match, the match made in heaven. But I look at, you know, pick number 32 right now in CBS's most recent mock. They got the Chiefs taking Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. So you have an offensive tackle. It has Adonai Mitchell going to Buffalo at 28, Brian Thomas to Tampa at 26. It has Keon Coleman going to Philly at 22. So a couple of the wide receivers off the board, but then you look there. I mean, Xavier Worthy would have been available. No, Troy Franklin, I believe, would have been available there. So there are going to be options, and it's not always the no-duh pick where you just feel like, man, this guy fell to Kansas City, they're going to take this guy. Brett Veach usually identifies the guys that he likes, and Andy Reid and everybody up in the front office, they identify the guys that they like and they go with them, not what everybody else, the national media, is saying what is the best possible fit. But it's still very early in this process. Very, very early for Kansas City to, you know, determine what they need with the wide receiver room. This is, you know, in the first couple weeks of March. And you're going to have April, which is when the draft's going to roll around. Free agency is going to be hot at that point. Trades are going to be happening. You can slowly start to build this roster, but I got to give credit to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay went out there, and they wanted to keep their number one there because they also know for Baker Mayfield or whoever their quarterback will be next year, because Baker's an unrestricted free agent, whoever their quarterback is, they're going to need a number one wide receiver to exceed there. It's not going to be a group. It's not going to be a quarterback that can make it work with a bunch of number twos and number threes. And in fact, a lot of quarterbacks out there can't make it work with a bunch of number twos and number threes. But Jake, when you look at the move like this, the signing like this for Tampa Bay for that price, doesn't really concern me too much. That doesn't feel like it would have been anywhere close to attainable. I never got the feeling Mike Evans was going to leave Tampa Bay. But where do you pivot if you're Brett Veach? Do you try to go after, you know, T. Higgins is franchise tag, so you'd have to trade for him. Cincinnati sure as hell isn't going to trade with you. Do you look on the route of a Tyler Boyd, you know, a Marquise Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, Calvin Ridley, or do you just say, let's try it in the draft and keep the wide receiver room young?
Well, they're going to go both, I think. They'll spend a depending on who's available at pick 32, but I believe they'll either use a first, second, or third round pick for a wide receiver. I mean, I would be shocked if they didn't go and try to get someone in the free. I mean, like a guy like Gabe Davis.
Oh yeah.
I mean that what you're looking for. I mean, you're not really looking for numbers. Numbers are nice, but you're looking for pieces to your offense. And right now, what this offense is lacking is a legitimate deep threat. You know, and Gabe Davis is that guy. I mean, I think Mooney's an interesting name. I don't think he was properly used in that Chicago offense. I mean, a couple of years with Fields, he was the quote unquote first option, the number one wide receiver. So I think, you know, that those are two guys that interest me. I don't think you're going to – I am not upset one bit that the Chiefs didn't get Evans. I think he's a guy who's over 30, and to pay somebody who's 30 years old that much money is, for me – I mean, that's why they walked away from Tyreek Hill. Not because he was 30, but they don't want to pay – look, I don't believe you pay wide receivers quarterback money. I think that's where teams get into trouble.
Yep.
You know, Davante Adams, all-world talent, stud. But the Raiders are paying him quarterback money. I'm not – even if it's, you know, a Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, like those guys get top-tier money. They get, quote-unquote, quarterback money, and I think that's how you wreck your salary cap. Because, look, the evidence – like, if the Chiefs would have – you know, flamed out, gone into Buffalo, lost that game. Like, then the conversation is completely different.
It is.
It's the ceiling's falling, the world's ending. What are we going to do? We have to throw all our resources at the wide receiver position because that's the problem. That was the issue. That's why the Chiefs didn't advance in the play. But that's not the conversation that we're having. So, look, the Chiefs have proven, look at the wide receiver room last year, they can win championships with those guys. Now, I think they're gonna do Patrick Mahomes some favors here, and I think the other piece of this is that you have your first receiving option, Travis Kelce, aging and declining, and usually guys around his age don't just gracefully drift off into the sunset. Mm-hmm. They usually fall off pretty hard. Now, I think Kelsey's the best ever to play at his position, so I don't think you're gonna see that. But I do think you saw it last year, his first year in how many seasons, not to catch 1,000 yards. You know, what was it, 5 years in a row he had over 1,000 yards receiving, 5 or 6 years in a row. And so that decline has already started. But, look, I think it's proven, keep him healthy, keep him right until you get to the postseason, the guy can still ball out. So all that said, I don't think you go overpay because I still think there's pieces – that are more important on the opposite side of the ball that you're going to want to spend your resources at, i.e. Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's got to be – and it seems like that's where they're – you know, they come out of the combine and all the reports are that you know, the Chiefs are getting close to signing Chris Jones, and we'll find out probably today if the franchise tag's going to be slapped on Snead. And so those are obviously the two big-name free agents that the Chiefs have going into this offseason. And they have a lot of them. I think 20 of them. You know, I think we don't see Willie Gay return. Can they figure out a deal with Drew Tranquil? You know, those are the things that, you know, you have to make sure you solidify this defense, and then you gotta fix the pieces on the offensive end, and you have to prepare for 2025. And you have a several guys that are key pieces to this team. They're going to be up, and you're not going to be able to keep all those guys. Look, the NFL is amazing at making sure teams don't do what the Chiefs are doing right now, right? They handicap you. You know, the guys that come up next year in the next offseason in 2025 are guys like Creed Humphrey, you know, Trey Smith, Nick Bolton. Like, those are big pieces on you know, offense and defense that you're going, you're not going to be able to keep them all, especially if you handcuffed yourself with a giant deal like this. Like, and I say like this, meaning the Mike Evans deal.
Yeah.
If you go out and you pay, you know, you look at the top of that list, the guys that are going to be at the top, and like you'd mentioned, I like teams just don't let wide receivers that are top end wide receivers hit the free agent market. They just don't. It doesn't happen. You know, those guys are extended. Those guys are tagged, i.e., you know, Higgins. I mean, so I don't think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked, because if I had all my, you know, all the guys that are available, my dream would be Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
I love that dude. I think he balls out. I think he's a deep threat. And, you know, 76 catches for over 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. Like, that would fit real nice on the other side of Rashee Rice and Kelce in between those two dudes. So, but the thing is that that's not reality. Like, I think even the Jaguars might be able to work a deal out with him. But if he hits the market, man, he's going to get upwards of $18 to $20 million, and I don't think you have the resources to spend that much money. Now, Gabe Davis, projections are somewhere between $12 and $14 million, right? And I think that's more realistic. Like, that's the, you know, $10 to $14 million. Like, that's where you are going to be able to go out and spend to get a guy like Gabe Davis. I think, honestly, though, I'd be shocked, you know, if he does. Like, I think free agents get overpaid, and that's just what happens. Like, Marquise Brown, he's going to get, I think, you know, these are all projections, guesses, you know, somewhere around $14-15 million. That's the top end, and I don't think he's worth it. Like, I think you're better served to get a guy like Mooney, or, you know, and I think Davis is like right in between. Like, I think there might be a team that goes out and overpays for him and gives him that 15-16, that Marquise. Like, I think someone's going to overpay Marquise Brown. I just do. I think someone's going to go.
Somebody desperate.
Yeah, someone's going to go pay him $15 million. That need, you know, he's proven he can be, you know, a bottom end one in this league, and so I don't know. It's going to be interesting. They have to go out and get somebody. Who that player is, I mean, look, they cut MVS because he was slated to make $12 million. And so I think they'd be willing to, if MVS played at that end, you know, if he had, you know, if he was reliable, if he was that deep threat, I think they would have paid him that money. He wasn't the guy they thought they were getting, and he's at the end of the contract, and that's where all the money is backloaded for those guys. So I think they're willing to pay somebody $12 million a year, you know, but who's that guy going to be? That's the question.
It really is the big question going into this offseason, because it's easy in the middle of the regular season to start pinpointing who you want, but you just automatically assume, oh, they're going to let that guy go. Oh, they're going to let that guy walk. They're not very good. They're not going to pay that guy. I think that a lot of teams are going to try to make it work with those top-end wide receivers. Tampa Bay clearly never wanted to see Mike Evans play in another uniform,
right?
Because they knew how important he was. I think Cincinnati, they know they're good. They know Ja'Marr Chase is their guy, but, man, do they want more than anything to keep that three-headed monster intact. Because when you pay Ja'Marr Chase and he's the number one and then nobody else is really that true number two or number three, how good is that offense really? So you'll see those teams become more desperate. And by the way, both playoff teams, Indianapolis was on the cusp of making it. You'd imagine they would want to keep Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah,
he's young and
I think
he's effective.
He even said that they're going to figure out something,
yes,
whether that be a tag on him or, you know, his projections, you know.
It'll be
22,
pricey.
24.
Yes. And that's not worth it, in my opinion. It. I'm not going to shun it, but you also understand this offseason was not for Kansas City to go blow all their money on a wide receiver.
No, but look, the $22 to $24 million is what he's probably going to get. And that's not the money that, you know, Tyreek Hill, Adams, that's not what they're getting, right? And they have a rookie wide receiver, or a quarterback. That's why they can go do that.
They can
that,
do it.
Right? That's why the 49ers can pay, you know, Ayuk the money that he got, you know, and Debo the money that he got. Like, that's like, it works when you have a quarterback on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
You can go overpay for those guys, and they make your quarterback better, right? We don't. Luckily, Kansas City does not have that problem, right? They need to put guys around Mahomes, you mm-hmm. know, to supplement, to be those weapons. You know, they don't need, you know, sure, would it be nice if they were able to keep Tyreek Hill and they had him still? Absolutely. But look what they turned that into, right? They have McDuffie, and they were able to move up and get Rice with those picks, you know, and then they have a couple other corners they used on that pick. So, I mean, like, they did that perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
They did that absolutely perfectly. And so that's what you're probably going to see, like, the hopes that you get maybe a turn Snead into a second-round pick, and maybe that second-round pick is the wide receiver that you're trying to bring in. Or it's, you know, capital to move up and get the guy that you want in the first round, you know, whoever that is.
And that's maybe what the Chiefs are eyeballing right now. I saw a tweet today about Legarius Sneed. It was, I thought, pretty accurate. I can't remember who it was from, but it was, you know, Chiefs fans need to level their expectation about what a Legarius Sneed return will look like. In the same way that we all needed to level our return about a Tyreek Hill return. It wasn't going to be, you know, Jaylen Waddle and a couple of first-round picks. Like, if you trade Legarius Sneed to, I think, the top two suitors are Detroit and Miami, like, you trade to those teams, they're probably more willing to part ways with picks because they feel like they're contenders right now. So you could get a second-round pick and maybe a third-round pick. But as we mentioned, or as Jake just mentioned, you package those, you move up in the first where maybe Brian Thomas of LSU is still available, or let's say Adonai Mitchell is kind of projecting in that 24 to 25 range. Well, then boom, there you go and get your guy. So Brett Veach understands what this team is going to need at the point they're on the clock. They're going to have their identified guy. They probably are talking about now if they can trade up for certain guys after the combine, because some guys are going to rise on those draft boards. But it may also be a tackle. You know, it could be an offensive tackle, as I brought up in that mock draft. The kid from Oklahoma, Tyler Guyton, they need a tackle. Donovan Smith is, I'm not going to say probably, but there's a chance he's not back. You need to find that left tackle of the future, because Donovan Smith isn't one. He was a stopgap guy. But to me, I look back at the last couple years and how the Chiefs had assembled their wide receiver room and the days after Tyreek Hill. Remember, Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't coming off in a 1,000-yard season. He had, you know, broken his collarbone, wasn't it? Collarbone or shoulder. He played like 3 games, and the Chiefs got him on a discount at $10 million a year for a 1-year prove-it deal. And then he became an 1,000-yard receiver with Kansas City. Like, that to me feels so much more likely than overpaying for Pittman, than overpaying for T. Higgins. And even though those guys would immediately become big-time contributors in Kansas City, we know how Brett Veach operates. He's going to want to find his guy, maybe the wide receivers in day two. Like, maybe Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. It doesn't feel like a Chiefs guy because he's 6'4" and is more of a big-bodied target. They usually go after the fast route runners with good hands. Though Rashee Rice was a little bit anti that because he didn't have the best of hands in college and he was a bigger target. So you never know. But I do think if they're going to go through the free agent route, it feels likely that they're going to go get that number two. You know, they're not going to go get the true, defined, bona fide number one. Like, if they overpay a little bit for Calvin Ridley, I'd be all right with that, and you could pencil in Calvin Ridley as your one. Like, that feels more likely. They'll sign a number two to be a number one. They're not going to sign a one to be a one because they need to have the money to extend Chris Jones and pay some other guys they want to pay. Maybe trading Legarius Sneed's going to open up some stuff. They saved $12 million in cap by cutting MVS. I mean, think about that, too. When they got Juju, they also brought in MVS. MVS wasn't a number one or number two. He was a number three, turn number two. It's how Brett Veach runs things a little bit, and he's gotten some cushion because of how Rashee Rice turned out. If Rashee Rice ended up being a bust, and the way Sky Moore did, and the way Kadarius Toney did, I don't think he gets the luxury of sitting back and signing number twos and number threes. He'd have to get a number one, because that would be unfair to Patrick Mahomes to have to play in the prime of his career without a true number one. But since Rashee Rice in year one, including the playoffs, had 1,200 yards, like Devontae Adams type stuff, that gives him the luxury of, hell, I'll give you another chance at finding a wide receiver. And since this wide receiver class is so loaded, Why not take a chance on it? Why not go get you a Donnie Mitchell? Why not go get you, you know, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia? And then you have two young wide receivers on rookie deals. And then the thought is, and the beautiful thought is, you hit on two rookies in back-to-back drafts. That's when the Cincinnati three-headed dragon kind of came about, right? They had T. Higgins, and then they got Ja'Marr Chase, and they paired those two with Tyler Boyd. We saw how good that Cincinnati offense is. Like, imagine if the Chiefs could recreate that. Rashee Rice could be the second coming of T. Higgins, and then what if you went out there and it's unlikely they find their Ja'Marr Chase because Ja'Marr Chase was a top 10 pick. The Chiefs are never going to be drafting in the top 10 unless they mortgage their future to go move up in the draft, and they never will because they feel confident later in the draft to find guys with a lot of value. They've done it now in three or four straight years. I mean, you go back to 2 years ago, Leo Chenal late in the draft. Legarius Sneed was late in the draft. Mike Dana late in the draft. Creed Humphrey later in the draft. Trey Smith late in the draft. You know, Jalen Watson, Josh Williams, Isaiah Pacheco late in the draft. So they're never going to be in that category of let's go get a top 10 pick. They don't feel the urge or the rush to do so. But man, if you could go out there and get your game changer, your playmaker in the draft, and then you pencil in a Darnell Mooney as a three, that may not sound sexy on the surface, but it is sexier than what it was last year. Because last year, it was Kadarius Toney as the one. It was MVS as the two. It was Rice as the three. Watson as the four. Now, I know rookies are unknown. You can't really give a prediction on a rookie until they show you what they can do. But, man, this wide receiver class is so loaded. I don't think there's many busts. I don't think there's going to be many guys that you go, wow, that guy was not at all what I thought he'd be. My concern a little bit is like Xavier Worthy. You look at some of the track record of guys that ran a sub 4.3, and like none of them panned out to be great players except for Chris Johnson. Like John Ross comes to mind with Xavier Worthy a little bit. Like John Ross seemed like a home run pick, and then he was out of the league very quickly. So sometimes it's the guy you're not expecting, the guy that didn't blow up at the combine. It's the guy that just was identified by a front office, said, that's our guy. He's a great route runner. He's going to fit well in this offense, because that's more important here. The reason the Chiefs kind of go off basis a little bit sometimes with their edge rushers, their tackles, their cornerbacks, their wide receivers, is because they are drafting to fit their scheme. Some front offices draft just the player they think is the best, but he may not fit the scheme. Like, the Chiefs went out and got Trent McDuffie where they did and traded up for him because he fit the scheme. You know, they got George Karlaftis because he fit the scheme. They got Felix Anudike-Uzomah as a project but felt like he could fit the scheme with the length and the athleticism. For the wide receiver room, like, it would not shock me if, like, a Donnie Mitchell was available. This would be, maybe I'm reaching too much with a Donnie Mitchell. Like, let's say Troy Franklin and Brian Thomas are available. Like, the Chiefs pivot to Ladd McConkey. I would say that's probably because they feel like Ladd McConkey fits the system better. That's when I kind of go into the draft of whoever they take. It's not always the best player available. It's not always the top talented guy. It's who they feel like can fit that scheme. It's why when they went with Rashee Rice, some people are like, that makes no sense. He didn't play in a tough conference. He played in the American at SMU. He dropped a lot of passes. Some of his numbers are inflated because of lack of competition. But the Chiefs looked at him and said, that's the guy that can fit our system. I expect the same thing to happen. And if they go out there and sign a number three wide receiver, it's probably because they feel like he fits the system more than he would in some other franchise or some other organization. So we'll see, but it's not going to be Mike Evans playing in a Chiefs uniform this year. He signs a two-year, $52 million extension with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, a little bit of a recap of the three local college teams and how they fared over the weekend. Spoiler, all three lost. We'll dive into that next on ESPN Kansas City. We are back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Well, what's new? The three local college teams find themselves on the losing side of things, and man, what a boring year it's been if you are either a KU, K-State, or Missouri fan. One of those teams is going to be headed to the NCAA tournament, and it might be one of the worst teams that college has ever put on the floor with Bill Self. And that's who we're going to open it up talking about today in the Kansas Jayhawks, who lost back-to-back games now. They fall to Baylor in Waco. Though I will say this, if you want me to be a little positive to open up the show, I thought they looked a lot better. Getting Kevin McCullough back, getting Kevin McCullough healthy, is vitally important for this team's success in March. And as we've gone over a few times throughout this season, the regular season, once Kansas let the Big 12 title hopes slip away, it didn't really matter that much anymore. Of course, it's always going to matter for seeding, but every time Joe Lunardi comes out with a bracket projection, like, KU seeding hasn't changed. They're either a 2 or a 3. I'd imagine they'll win tomorrow night against Kansas State. Probably won't beat Houston on Saturday. And I'd imagine they'll grab 2 in Kansas City. So you walk in at 24-10. I think that's a 3 seed. And if that's the worst team that Bill Self's ever put on the floor, 24-10 with the schedule they've had, in the end, it's not that bad. But my point is, Saturday's game, as frustrated as it may have made you a Kansas fan, you look at the big picture here. The bench looked a little bit better. Elmarco Jackson, more specifically. Kevin McCullough played well. DeJuan Harris Jr. played well. Hunter Dickinson played well. Now, Johnny Furphy and KJ Adams, not so much, but you know if they all five play well together, I put them up against many teams in the country. And here's what I think about the NCAA tournament, if you want to buy into what seeds mean. Of course, the goal is, if you're Kansas or you're a blue blood, is to grab a number 1 seed, right? That is the top goal of the regular season. Win your conference, stay healthy in the Big 12 tournament, get a number 1 seed, or stay healthy in your conference tournament. But look at last year. UConn was a 4. San Diego State was a 5. Florida Atlantic was a 9, I believe. The year Kansas won the national championship, right? 2022, they played an 8-seeded North Carolina team. Like, it feels like once you get to March, it really does not matter what you did in the regular season. We've seen some of Bill Self's best teams get bounced in the first weekend, and you went in with more confidence than anybody of this is going to be a team that's going to make it far, second weekend, third weekend. It's almost locked in at this point. And then they lose to Northern Iowa, or they lose to somebody like VCU in the Elite Eight. Those are some of the best teams. Now, some of the teams that maybe you didn't expect to go that far, think the 2012 squad that lost to Kentucky in the national championship game. There were times that season people said, this just doesn't really feel like that type of team. They didn't have a terrible record, but they had some questionable losses. Not as many as this group's had, but I look at this Kansas team differently than I did a month ago. Now, a game on Saturday against Baylor, you went in not expecting them to win. But if they would have gotten roundhouse kicked out of Waco, lose by 15, not close, I think I feel differently. Now, that game nearly did spiral away from them. Baylor got hot. They weren't missing, as teams seem to do when playing Kansas at home this year. But no excuses there. I look at it and I say, Kevin McCullough scored 20 points for you. That means he's healthy. Hunter Dickinson appears healthy. DeJuan Harris Jr. becoming a little bit more of a scorer. It's going to come down to now, can KJ Adams keep the spacing? Can Johnny Furphy start hitting from outside? I mean, he got put in the doghouse in that game. Johnny Furphy got pulled with like 12 minutes left in the game and never came back. Bill Self was clearly irate with the way that his freshman was playing. But the point is here, they're healthy now. And even in loss, it doesn't matter, because what do we know is a fact? KU's making the NCAA tournament. If they're on the bubble, different story. All this talk and this negativity that we have boasted on the show before has been about them not living up to number 1 seed expectation. But you get this late in the season, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. Like, you can be at a high confidence point, just knocked off a top 15 team, we're on a 4-game winning streak, we feel good, and you could get bounced in the first weekend. That's just the unpredictability about the NCAA tournament. Another point we've brought up. Kansas plays horribly on the road, right? They're 3-6. They're not going to be playing in a road game in the tournament. They're playing on neutral sites. And depending where they get shipped off to, it was, if they were a number one seed, going to be Omaha and Dallas. Now it's likely they get Omaha and Detroit or Omaha and Los Angeles. The only way that becomes a quote-unquote road game is if Kansas were to draw Arizona's region and get Arizona and LA in the lead eight. That would be the only likely scenario. But I look at some of the bracketologies that Joe Lunardi's put out there. Like, I think the first weekend looks favorable for Kansas City. Now, these are all projections. It's going to change up, right? If KU beats K-State and somehow knocks off Houston because Houston's clinched the Big 12 title, and you go in there and you catch them napping, which I don't see likely, but again, we're just playing hypotheticals, you could be boosted up into a two seed with a good NC or a good Big 12 tournament run. Right now, it looks like KU's going to be playing on Wednesday for the first time in Big 12 tournament history, it feels like. I think that would be the case. And they'd have to play four games in 4 days. Not likely they win it all, but you grab a couple of wins and then you take on somebody like Iowa State or Baylor or Houston in the semis or the championship game, you feel better about this team. But I walked away thinking that with Kansas. The loss, I thought KU shot the ball pretty well. There were some ugly stretches, but I didn't feel the same as some of the other losses, like the loss against Texas Tech, of course not. The loss against BYU, the loss against Kansas State, the loss against UCF. Like, this felt like a very normal loss. It felt exactly, here's what I would say. It felt like that loss in Ames against Iowa State. A better team, they were supposed to beat you, they beat you, you didn't play horribly, you just didn't win. And that's where I look at the NCAA tournament and I go, okay, KU's going to be fortunate not to play a Big 12 team. They're going to get somebody else that doesn't have much of a book on them. And if KU stays healthy, folks, I go back to what the non-con was. When KU was healthy, they beat UConn. When KU was healthy, they beat Tennessee, both top 10 teams in the nation right now. When this team was healthy, they beat Houston, the number one team in the nation. So if you're a Kansas fan trying to hold on to hope, that's healthy Kansas. They haven't been healthy since apparently that Houston game. They lost to K-State right after that, and that's when Kevin McCullough didn't play well, and Bill Self brought up that he'd been dealing with that bone bruise. No, he had sat out and missed a game and came back for Houston, so maybe we'll go even before the Houston game.
I was going to say, yeah, they weren't even all the way right for that Houston
game. Yeah.
He just had some, he had some lengthy rest.
Yes, he had a full weeks of rest, I believe. So you go before that, let's say the game before Houston.
Because they sat him out entirely when Oklahoma State came to Allen Fieldhouse.
Yes, he was, I believe.
He wasn't right then.
And that, to me, is what you take away. If KU's a 3 or 4, but they're healthy, that's better than if they would have run that team into the ground and they were a 2 and they were not healthy.
I mean, they've proven that when they're on, they can beat anybody in the country.
Mm-hmm. And that's March.
Right.
That's March.
And that's where, yeah, especially now, that's where the NCAA tournament is.
And, you know, it's almost funny because you shouldn't have any confidence about a 8-loss Kansas team right now. They've lost the most conference games they ever had with Bill Self, and it's probably going to increase to one more when they play Houston. They're going to have double-digit losses likely going into the NCAA tournament, which would then, if they lose one more, assuming they'd have to go win the national championship, but if they were to lose one more in the NCAA tournament, 11 losses would be the most in the Bill Self era. But still, I look at this team and go, they were preseason number one for a reason, and they hit this patch where they haven't been healthy. Not to make too many excuses, but I think for Kansas fans, for College Hoops fans, you go, man, now that they're healthy. I mean, also, it wasn't going to be perfect the first game Kevin McCullough was back. It's going to take, you know, 2 games, which is good for Kansas. They play K-State on Tuesday, and then you could have a healthy squad against Houston. And then that could be your measuring stick, your measuring tool there. How do they match up against the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament in their own house? Now, then they go into the Big 12 tournament. You grab 2 wins, let's say like Cincinnati and BYU, and then you go play Iowa State in the semis. Take your chances. Like, this is the part of the season that matters. And what matters and what Bill Self has clearly been trying to do, I mean, if you watch the game, he was doing line changes. He was putting four bench guys, which it's the worst bench Bill Self has ever had. Fran Fraschilla even said that. He's like, this is the weakest bench I've seen Bill Self ever have. He's doing line changes because he's wanting to get those guys somewhat comfortable. Three of the four were atrocious on Saturday, but it's just throwing them into the fire consistently. They got to play. And then once March rolls around, it's going to be a six-man rotation likely. That would be my guess. But you want to make sure they're healthy, and I think that's how Bill Self's handling things. He's making sure they're healthy. I think he probably walked away thinking, I feel better about this team now than if they would have won with a banged-up Kevin McCullough or Kevin not even playing. I don't think he would have felt great because he knows, KU knows, the rest of college hoops knows, they can't go far in the NCAA tournament without him, without a healthy version of him. So they lose on Saturday, back-to-back losses, most losses in the conference, a Big 12 era for Bill Self. And then they'll take on K-State tomorrow night, senior night. They've got great numbers there at Allen Fieldhouse on senior night and against K-State. And then they take on Houston to close out the regular season. And then it's all do or die time. Big 12 tournament, NCAA tournament. It's the postseason. But fortunately for KU, unlike the other two teams we're going to dive into, they are headed to March Madness. K-State, Missouri, not so much. We'll start it off with K-State. Look, we discussed this all week long. It was an elimination game. It was an elimination game for Cincinnati. It was an elimination game for K-State. And you felt like, you know, K-State had the odds stacked against them. But even when things seemed bleak, they found a way to come back and make that one interesting. And in fact, at one point, took the lead. And they needed one more stop. One more stop to win that game. And no, it wouldn't have locked in a shot for them to compete in the NCAA tournament. They would have had to have likely beaten either Kansas or Iowa State and then win a game or two in Kansas City. But this now pretty much eliminates any opportunity. I mean, Tyler Perry once again was great for K-State, 26 points. Jarrell Colbert had a career game, 15-7. No, Kaluma wasn't that great. Dayday Ames wasn't that great. Cam Carter scored 13 but missed 7 of his 11 shots and had 6 turnovers. There were moments in the game that K-State looked really good. They shot 42% from 3, 84% from the free throw line. They shot 17 more free throws than Cincinnati. But here's the glaring problem, as it's been in all of their losses, 19 turnovers to 6. They can't take care of the basketball. And that's why they're not going to win tomorrow night. It's why it's likely they're not going to beat Iowa State, and it's why they're not going to make a deep run in the Big 12 tournament. They can't take care of the basketball. They can't extend leads, and they can't come all the way back and ice those games because there's always that concern of even if they're shooting well, you get a 26-point performance from Tyler Perry, they can't take care of the basketball. Cincinnati could in this game, and they hit the big shot when it mattered. And once again, K-State had that opportunity to send the game into overtime or win it, and they turned it over. That is the epitome of this K-State team. Now, that door is open for a reason, the Big 12 tournament. Every team gets an opportunity to go win it. But now you look at it and you say, K-State's got to play on Tuesday, I believe. You know, if they lose to KU and Iowa State, they are a Tuesday team for sure. So then you are asking them to win Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 5 in 5 days. That's why none of those teams ever make it deep. It's why if they win their first game, they're usually bounced by the next team they face because that team had rest and they did not. We talk about the turnarounds for Saturdays and then to Big Monday. They at least get Sunday to rest. If you're playing on Tuesday or Wednesday, the Big 12 tournament, you're likely not winning. The top four seeds get to play on Thursday, 3 in 3 days. 5 and 5, it's not happening. Not with this K-State team. That was the opportunity to go in there and keep hope alive. And even if they would have lost to KU, which the signs will point to that, they would have had a outside chance to beat Iowa State. It's tough to win in Bramlage. If their season was on the line at that point, absolutely would have been a rocking environment. But you lose to a 16-12 Cincinnati team. It's not a good loss. And even though you weren't expected to win, and it wouldn't have been a monumental win. It would have kept them breathing. It would have kept them alive. We said this was an elimination game. There's no more back against the wall games. It's over. It's done. They have to win the Big 12 tournament to get in. Their resume is not good enough. You know, I even saw a tweet from Ryan Gilbert of GoPowerCat.com. We've had him on the show a few times. He said, even if you do win against KU and Iowa State, they're not a shoe-in. They'd still have to do damage in Kansas City. So you're talking about winning against a top 15 team on the road, which you just proved you couldn't beat Cincinnati on the road, and then you got to go beat Iowa State, who's a top two team in this conference. And even if you do that, you got to win probably one in Kansas City. You get in at 20-13. That feels likely. But still, back-to-back ranked wins, something K-State's not done this year, or at least not to my knowledge, and then have to win again in Kansas City, yeah, that's really tough to do. Yeah, you know the last time that K-State played back-to-back ranked opponents? It was that three-game stretch in the middle of the year, Iowa State, Houston, and Oklahoma. They lost all three. And then lost to Oklahoma State right after that. That was the chance. I'm sorry to say it. If you're a K-State fan, that was the chance. And I feel like going into that game, you knew that was the chance. 17-12 with this resume going into Lawrence to take on Kansas. Then you lose that game. Now it is absolutely a matter of it doesn't even matter if you beat Iowa State. You still have to win 2-3 games in Kansas City. No, I take that back. You have to win the damn thing. You have to win the Big 12 tournament if you lose to Kansas tomorrow night. I'd say right now they'd have to win the Big 12 tournament. And that just is not going to happen. I could be wrong, seeing crazier things happen in sports. But for the Big 12 this year, for a bottom team in the conference to win 5 games in 5 days, it's nearly impossible. Especially for K-State, who, oh, by the way, doesn't have a bench. You don't have a bench. You're not going to go that far in the Big 12 tournament. Those are for the teams that are rested, going to have to only play 3 in 3 days. I don't see KU or K-State winning it. But for K-State, gut punch. Year two in the Jerome Tang era, you know, preseason, he was talking about Phoenix getting to the Final Four, high expectation for this team. A lot went wrong. Naquan Tomlin, Quez Glover, you know, the feud with the president. And now this K-State team, after what an amazing year it was in year one, you have a couple of guys that you hit on in the portal, Tyler Perry, Arthur Kaluma, and you're going to lose a lot of these guys next year. And it's going to be a matter of, can you hit the portal hard again? Can you recruit pretty well? Now, you've got some talented kids coming in. I believe David Castillo is the top-ranked recruit coming to K-State. You can keep Data Ames, Gerald Colbert, but it stings to miss out on the NCAA tournament, especially where this K-State team was, you know, after that Kansas win. I'd even go as far back to say after that Baylor win. And then they only found a way to win 3 games from January 24th to now. And it was KU, BYU, and West Virginia all at home. Now, if you really want to get nitty-gritty about this, you know the last road Big 12 game K-State won? West Virginia, their second Big 12 game of the year. They have not won on the road since. So what makes you think they're going to win in Lawrence tomorrow night, especially after they already beat KU? KU's getting healthier. It's going to be a hornet's nest game. It'll be the most hostile environment they've played in all year long. And then you look up and you're 17-13 and needing a miracle to get into the NCAA tournament. That felt like the chance. That felt like the shot, and they didn't get it done. Jake, before you move on to Missouri, is that where you stand right now? They got to win the Big 12 tournament? I mean, it felt like the loss to Cincinnati put that nail in the coffin.
Well, I mean, most likely. I wouldn't say they have. Like, look, they could, if somehow they knocked off Kansas and Iowa State, right? I think they would need to knock off another top-tier team in the Big 12 tournament, being whether that's Iowa State, mm-hmm. Kansas, Houston, or Baylor. So
they need a good matchup and another ranked
right.
win. Yeah.
So you win your first, you know, that would be like a semifinal match.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I could see them winning those 2 games, if they won those 2 games, and then won 3 games, you know, and then had a matchup mm-hmm. with one of those 2 teams and got to the final and then lost in the final. I could see that, you know, if you knocked off you know, if you basically ran a streak of, you know, winning next five games, if you could, you'd have to, you know, win the next two and then win three games in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah. I just think this year more than ever for a bottom four seed, if you got to play on Tuesday.
Well, if they won those two games against Iowa State and Kansas, they probably wouldn't be playing on Tuesday.
Let's see. If they were to win,
they would be ahead of.
They'd be 9-9.
Right. And so Cincinnati, UCF, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia would be those bottom four.
Yeah. So they're all playing on that first day. But I think, you know, factoring in right now who Cincinnati has, they have to go to Oklahoma. They have to then host West Virginia. So Cincinnati could leapfrog there if K-State is to lose to KU. UCF, another team that's 6-10. They will have Houston here and TCU. They're not going to win to close out the year.
I mean,
so
I'm like their percentage, like 2% chance.
Oh, but yeah, it's
less than that.
Very, very small
right.
at this point. But
look, they're playing. You know, they still have a shot at the NIT.
They do. And maybe that is something that Jerome Tang really wants to do. I'd imagine he'd be that coach that wants to keep that team playing. But yeah, that's a stinger for sure on Saturday. That felt like it could make your path so much easier because it doesn't put really much stock into this Kansas game. It was like we can lose this game and still beat Iowa State and
right,
be fine.
Right,
now
no,
it's you got to win both.
Right. It put their. I mean, it wasn't the final nail in the coffin, but it was the second to last nail in the coffin.
That, yeah.
You know.
It feels like if they lose tomorrow night, that would be the nail because that puts them in the first day.
Correct.
And even Iowa State probably would still beat them in that final regular season game. As for the Missouri Tigers to close out the show, they had a very, very heroic comeback, fall short, scored 52 in the second half, but at the end of the day, a 19-point deficit at halftime, too much to overcome. Missouri falls to 8-21, 0-16 in SEC play. They have now firmly cemented themselves in the bottom of the SEC. Vanderbilt has three conference wins. Missouri's still without one. And Missouri gets to host 11th-ranked Auburn on Tuesday. And then LSU on the road to close out the year this Saturday. Mercy, could anybody see this coming? I mean, it's one thing to have a gap year. It's one thing to not be very good. 0-18 in a Power 5 conference. That's Vandy and that's DePaul stuff. DePaul is 0-18 in the Big East right now. They're also 3-26 on the year. I did not envision this from Dennis Gates in year two, especially with some of the games I felt like that were very winnable. I felt like playing Arkansas at home, after you saw what Arkansas was, very winnable. Georgia at home, very winnable. Mississippi State at home, very winnable. They lost by 24. You know, you had Ole Miss at home, very winnable. A&M at home, very winnable. Vandy on the road, very winnable. You feel like if you play 18 conference games, one of those is bound to go your way. To be on the losing side in every single game, dating back to December 30th, they haven't had a win in 2024. They have they've got two wins since November 28th. Wichita State, who is barreling toward 20 losses, and Central Arkansas, who is 9-23. I don't remember a Missouri team this bad. And Chris Beard in the post game, he said, well, better days are ahead for Missouri. We are 1 year removed from them getting to the round of 32 in the NCAA tournament. This is not Vanderbilt. I don't know if this is Dennis Gates' fault. I mean, there are talented guys on this team. That's the thing. I think Noah Carter, talented. Tamar Bates, talented. Nick Honor, talented. Those were some guys that were on the squad last year, and you brought in Tamar Bates, who's been a stud. Now, you lost Caleb Grill. Connor Vanover hasn't really been when you thought he'd be. Some of the young guys haven't really developed. No, Anthony Robinson's had bright moments, but still very young. To me, though, it's not like an outclassed team. I didn't look at Missouri. It would be one thing, Jake, if we saw this Missouri team in the preseason and said that team is going to lose every single game in conference play. Like, undoubtedly. There were a couple times here locally with, like, Kansas football, you'd go, they're not going to win a
right.
one.
Yeah.
I didn't see that from a Missouri team like this.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did. I mean, not – and it just – the momentum just kept carrying them. And it's
–
I mean – and you don't survive this. Like, and I'm not saying by any means Gates is going to lose his job. What I'm saying is that no coach who's lost every single conference game has ever come back and won an NCAA tournament with that team.
No. I don't see Dennis Gates being the guy. Now, you can't.
Well, no, they're not going to fire him.
No, but I don't think he's going to be the guy that you go, he brought Missouri basketball back. We all thought that last year. It was Tang, Gates, and Self. Well, Self actually didn't coach in the Big 12 of the NCAA tournament, but all three of those teams were headed in. It was like, wow, for the first time in feels like forever, all three local teams have good college basketball programs. Nix that for Missouri. They got two more chances to win a SEC game. Auburn, who's ranked, probably not going to happen. And then you have to go to LSU on the road. They beat Kentucky there not too long ago. So 0-18, very much on the table for Dennis Gates and the Tigers. There is Ray Charles. So it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City. I'll have to pack my things and go.